Once again, Ali Warren and Laura Moriarty.
Well, I'll begin by saying something that Ali and I just discovered, which was that it's just not going to inspire any questions. It's just another one of those things. We just discovered that when I won the Poetry Center Book Award, it was 1983, and that was the year Ali was born. And in 1983, I was 31, and Ali is 31. So isn't that weird? As I predicted, there's not much you can say about it.
But there it is. We're pondering those numbers. Eights and threes and ones.
How do you find the process of collaborating your poems and putting them together to make a book? How do you know which poems belong in a book, this book?
I'm usually kind of doing a project, you know, so I'm usually allowing myself to do some things or requiring myself to do some things that, while I'm doing that, form a book. Who That Divines is an odd book because it's more like a series of books. A lot of my older books are long, sustained, like Atonalist is a sort of essay and poetry, and it's all that way. And it quotes a lot of people, so that's a kind of, I really feel embraced and ensconced in and in resistance to and responding to and et cetera, to the poetry community. So I tend to include other people's work in my work sometimes. But sometimes I allow myself to use proper names, and sometimes I say I can't do it or whatever. You know, it's sort of, and then it's a certain amount, you start counting them. Do you have a way that, how do you know?
I guess I have two chapbooks that were collaborations, but they were just with one other person, so it wasn't a bunch of people. So that was a more, I don't know, not that just writing one poem with one person is intimate, but it was a sort of ongoing dialogue, and I sort of lost my own sense of my own voice while writing it, which was fun, helpful, refreshing.
Ali and I wrote a poem together, which is in Who That Divines, and I lost my sense of my voice when I wrote that poem with you two.
What's the poem?
Do you remember what it's called?
I don't. I sort of, before it came out, I forgot that we had written it, and then I was like, oh yeah, we wrote that poem together. It's pretty good.
I honestly, I can't remember
that. To read it before we go on to
right, it's, yeah. It's, it says something about with Ali one.
Yeah.
But we won't be able to, we have to just read every other line or something.
Yeah.
We didn't, it's not like my line, your line.
The questions are floating around, I can tell.
Oh yeah, that's a tour gesture. There we go.
Consolatory gesture. Ring your bells? All right, each line. Let's say the title together.
Okay.
Consolatory gesture. Reverse embrace.
Vows to remember.
Also to empty.
The poet, woman, word, and thought.
Caught at the beginning of.
Bewilderment, lucidly.
Loss agent and patient.
The rhythm of not.
Substituting conflationary.
Construction with what?
For world read earth.
For earth birth.
Worn inside out.
As for study and less.
Poetry for language.
Actual forgetting.
Alone and first in the mind.
Disclosing an order.
Wrapped in its own joke.
Shuttling between both.
Limits tremble or.
Pretend what big idea.
Allows nothing left out.
Into accord with one another.
Like rapture is left or beings.
And to save them.
I was struck listening to Ali and that after reading that there's a quality of word-to-word trickishness, sort of, that I think there are times when your work is speechy, and mine as well, but a lot of times it's not really speechy, it's not narrative, and yet it's expressive, and it is really relying a lot on word sound and on word, on connotation. If you use a word, sometimes I'll hear a poet and they'll say, well, this poem is called Dear, D-E-A-R. And whereas if I'm going to call a poem Dear, I'm just going to say Dear, and I'm going to want you to have all the deers. I'm going to want the little animal, I'm going to want Dear Abby or whatever, you know. And I kind of feel that you do the same thing, mm-hmm. that you want connotation, that you want to, there to be a waviness mm-hmm. in meaning. And there's a quality of impact, but it's not exactly like, it's not discursive, it's not explanatory, it's not narrative.
I mean, why not have all the meanings that you can? I feel like,
wanting it both
why
ways?
Limit them?
But Laura, can I make an observation along those lines? I think that's really true, but I also think that, especially for the ladybug laws, that's a really apt description of what you were reading as well. I mean, it's really, really...
It's a dense, yeah.
It's dense.
Yeah.
It's sort of a dense. I mean, it's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's lots of lightness in the poem, in what you're saying. But, I mean, orally and sonically, it's really dense and moves on those kind of word-to-word or even syllable-to-syllable lines. I don't know. That's just one way I was hearing it. I've heard you read it before, but hearing it today is that's part of the pleasure.
And I felt that when after I read and then I heard Allie read that there was a quality of humor.
Mm-hmm.
That you're using, you're like, well, this is going to be a really silly, stupid use of this word. I'm now going to say the word ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
Take that.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. You know, and there's a charm to it. But then you're also interested in the sound of it,
mm-hmm.
which seems to me kind of Clark Coolidge-y, if I may say that.
I won't resist that.
While Allie was reading some of the poems, I was following along in the book, and some of the words or stanzas she skipped through, or you skipped through, did that on purpose, and did you change it? I can't remember.
I skipped a lot of words.
A lot, no.
Just a few?
Yeah.
There was, when I was preparing for the reading, I realized, I feel like now that those poems are in a book, I can't change them. Which is difficult for me. I feel like I feel most like a poet when I'm editing, and I feel like there were a few instances looking at some of those poems where I'm like, oh, that line should be different. And so when I perform them, I just read them in the way that I would write them now. Which is maybe illegal. I don't know if you're supposed to
do
that.
No, later, if you get selected, you get to change them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's excellent.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And there's the Whitman example, you know.
Yeah.
Endlessly rewriting for it.
Yeah.
So what inspires that revision or that change? Is it a sonic thing or is it a, you don't feel that? I guess just what inspires that desire to continue editing now? Is it ever like done or is it perpetually changing?
I thought those poems were done, and I think they mostly are. So they were very like, I edited that book a lot. Because those poems span a long time period. They're like my 20s, basically. So they had a lot of time to live before they were set down there. So I think they were pretty set. But so mostly it was my ear, like in preparing for the reading. It reads different on the page, I think, than when you perform them. And so practicing to them to myself in my room, I was like, that doesn't sound good. So I just took it out, which is also what guides me, I think, when I'm just doing it on a day-to-day level, editing my ear. And more, though, I also want to make sure that people don't confuse my meaning in some way and think that I believe something politically, which is the opposite of what I believe. And so I feel like a little more touchy about getting the meaning right in some ways now than I feel like I used to.
There's like intimacy and a relationship between intimacy and like kind of this brusque pushing away that I think is really interesting in both of your works, even like concrete elements. And then there's this kind of like whether it comes across as vulgar, or if it comes across as like today or whatever, I don't know. It like creates some kind of space for a genuine interaction. And I don't know, but I'm not even sure if I'm asking a question really, but I mean, in some ways I am. Is that something, I think it's obviously something you're aware of. I guess I'm just thinking of like a poem, kind of if it explodes at one point, like kind of erupts in some way, it's kind of like we're left in the kind of, it's like too exaggerated, but you're kind of like left in a space where you can actually be sincere. Or like sincerity is possible in a poem without it being terrible. Which I think you guys really balance really well. There's no question in there, I don't think.
Well, it seems like there's a little bit of a sense of abstraction or following a melody. Ali says, you know, listening to the music of it, and I think I really see that in her work, and I often, for myself, when I'm editing, I'll read the piece out loud. And if you read the piece out loud, I think you find the clunkers. You find the extra words. You're like, wow, I'm being like really explainy here. What was that about? Or like just something extra that you don't want. And I think it's really a similar process to editing any art, actually, or redoing any art. It is that maybe something that you started with, some kernel of something, is not the thing that you need, and it's the thing that needs to be buried. And in terms of, I'm not sure what you meant by exploding and erupting, though as a volcano person, I liked those concepts. But I mean, I think that there's a certain amount of pressure put on meaning.
Exploding in the sense of like the arm's length thing. I don't know, I just feel like, and maybe that's just kind of, you know, you're like, I'm bringing you in, I'm being very intimate, my voice is intimate, and then all of a sudden I say something which I know is like going to put someone at a distance.
Aggression, yeah.
Ejaculate.
I value it, I think.
Does that put you at a distance rather than bring you closer?
You know, I don't know. I think it's problematic. I don't know.
I feel like I'm like, human resources or something sometimes in my poems. Like I'm managing lots of voices or something. And so sometimes the sincerity of what I might say to counterbalance the other things like comes through or something, but then I lose track of who's me and mm-hmm. who's not in the poem. So there's that, but I also think that there's what was I gonna say? With this sincerity thing. I mean, I'm not sure what that is, but I feel like if you do the same thing too much, any one thing too much, then there's just like people stop listening. It's like playing hard to get or something.
And also there's a desire for a change up. I mean, for myself, there's a desire for multiple textures. So there might be a texture of speech or a texture of a quote or a texture of something that's multisyllabic or a political explanation, or, you know, there's just a whole bunch of things that something could be. And once you're going along with your speechiness and your say erotic words or whatever, then you might want to slide something in there that's different and that's off-putting or that's contextualizes or that contradicts or, you know, does one of those other verbs that can keep the ball rolling.
I did have a question. I was curious as to the initial development of your poem, the process that it takes. Is it something that shows up and presents itself and it flows along the page and then you edit? Mm-hmm. Or is it something that shows up in small little snippets and then from those then you work and you flow through it and then you come back and then you add to that? I was just curious for either one of you, like how your process works.
Do you want to go?
I wonder that myself. When I sit down to work, I like, how do I do this again? You know, I keep a lot of notebooks. I have a lot of projects going at the same time. I collect language from books. Sometimes I have subject matter, then sometimes I just write. You know, so I feel like I use every technique I can come up with. Recently, I was doing some teaching, and we've been writing in class, And it was a very interesting teaching because the people that I was working with were very very individuated writers. They were not really students, they were colleagues. And so we began writing in class in ways that I had done before with other folks, but it really produced some interesting work, and it changed the reality in the class. And we sort of formed this post-class group where we will write in common if we ever get a chance to meet. So I think that if one thing doesn't succeed, move on to the next thing. It's always, my only rule is that you don't have to be inspired.
Yeah.
That's my only rule.
You don't have what?
Don't have to be inspired. Oh. It's okay if you are. It probably isn't great. But can you say? I'm curious.
I think I mostly collect language and have a notebook. Sometimes I get lucky and it will just feel like it moves through me and it appears and I don't really have to edit it much, but mostly... as I said before, I feel most like a poet when I'm editing. It feels like that's where you sort of get down to the nitty gritty, or where your ear becomes alive. You're constructing meaning in a way from the raw materials or something. And I think I try to not perfect the poem in one sitting or even in a week or something. Like if it's not working, I just let it sit and then come back to it, and usually there'll be a new way to look at it after a while. But unlike Laura, I think I often rely on inspiration. Yeah. So if there's like, if I'm like hammering away at something and trying to make it good, or I'm trying to work with language that isn't feeding me, then I sort of give up on it.
Which I think I do as well. I think I only say that as, I think sometimes that the work accrues in a way that is very workmanlike, mm-hmm. and that there can be moments where it really comes together in a way that is very pleasurable. And I think, for instance, I've been busy, I've been moving and stuff, so I haven't been able to write much lately. And I really miss it. Mm-hmm. Just the activity of the cohesion of the deals that you're thinking about putting together and all the projects that you're thinking of doing, and then when something is the thing, and that is a great pleasure in a certain way. And so maybe it's inspired.
Thank you.
I have a question for Ali that's actually doesn't have to do with your work. Mm-hmm. I caught the Frank O'Hara 50th anniversary reading.
Oh yeah,
and
that's fun.
I remembered that you, I think you read Hornkind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you selected that, or like if that was assigned, or I don't know what your relationship was to that.
I was very lucky to receive it. Steve assigned it to me.
I read it and I said, Ellie Warren.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's the best.
A couple more questions out there. Back row. To talk about like a sort of a, I think you both kind of have like this polyphony of like voices, like a bunch of different sort of voices coming through. That feels sort of like, does it feel like that has to be political? You're trying to then manage like multiple perspectives but sort of contain it in one poem. Like, I guess just what kind of, is there like explicitly political, implicitly political? How does it sort of, does that idea relate at all to what you're trying to do with that?
I feel like doing anything is political. Like anything that you're doing in your life has political connotations, whatever choices that you're making. So listening to language and being in the world and having your ear to it is being completely enmeshed in the ways that we're using language materially and relationally and in the media and otherwise. So I feel like it's already so thick with it that so it's explicitly political, I guess, for me. Shaping it so that it, I don't think I'm trying to shape it into like a political message or a stump speech or something. I feel like I find out things I believe by writing it or understand them differently or something. But it's very important to me that like if a, I should watch my words.
don't watch them.
If like some racist, sexist, asshole stockbroker read my work and really loved it, I would feel like I was a failure.
Yeah, I think that I knew before Ali said that that we have a commonality of our community. Our community believes that writing is, that any activity, including writing, is a political activity. So that, that one lives in a politics and one expresses a politics by one's choices every day. And I think that in the last 4 or 5 years, this politics has actually kind of come out and been in, and you could experience it. You could walk it, you could yell it, you could, you know, shake your fist, and you could occupy it, you could, you know, and you could see your friends and your poet friends and people that you're in common with across the plaza, and, you know, getting arrested and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, and for me, as being an older person and having kind of had that background from the way past of that having happened in the past, it has a kind of echoing quality. And I also think that the writing that came out of the 80s reacted to writing that was earlier in the, there, it reacted in a way to an aesthetics of writing and said, well, writing is, this isn't a political act, this writing, this use of language. Our problem is in language, and so one of our problems, or a context that we are in, language determines it. And so manipulating language is a very political thing to do. And I think that we were pretty arrogant about what we thought, how we thought it could affect things back then. But I think that I don't disagree with that idea that it's a political thing. And I think that we had enemies, and we believed that certain people did kinds of writing that we thought were bad and that were politically bankrupt. And so everything was kind of very balkanized. And since then, I've discovered that a lot of those people who I thought were bad, in fact, might be political activists. They might go to some country. They might give lots of money to poor people, or they might give all their money, you know, whatever. So even though I might think that their writing was something that I found politically questionable, their politics actually might be a lot better than mine. So I felt like it became complicated as I thought about it. But I'm happy to think, Ali, that sometimes I think that about some awards or successes or something like that, that, you know, if too many people are telling you you're great, then you got to really wonder, you know? So I think it's a peculiarity of our particular community that, as Larry Price, who is a writer who used to work here at the Poetry Center, once said, I want to hurt them, about his own writing.
Well, the good thing about this award is only one person is telling you you're great.
Yeah, it's a pretty small potatoes award. And I have a lot of friends that have won awards who win those big $100,000 awards, and some of them are close friends who I love their work. So,
yeah, sure.
These rules and these, you know, they're wavy, you know.
Yeah.
Not to in any way.
No.
I value having won it. I value
having it. Unless there's one more, like, burning question, as they say. Anybody have? let's thank our poets.